Hello and welcome to the final night of Millennial 2019. I've got my camera switched off because Orwell and Good is my guest and his internet is not very reliable. So I think it'd be less onerous on his connection if I keep the camera switched off. Now, later on, I will have Morgoth in 2 hours from now. But for now, it is Orwell and Good. Now, Orwell and Good started off as a Twitterer and has done very well on that platform. But more lately, he began a YouTube channel and has been doing, I don't know if you'd say the video logs, sort of diary entries almost on there. So that's good as well. But I will link to that in the description later on to his YouTube channel. But you can find it from his Twitter. So I should say that technical problems prevented him from appearing earlier at his scheduled time, but we've managed to piece this together. So welcome, Orwell and Good, to Millennial 2019.
Thank you very much for having me, Wes. It's a pleasure.
Well, I think our conversation last year was a particularly good one. I would recommend that people go and check that out if they haven't seen it. So I did want you to appear this year, a sort of priority. So welcome. And what would you say about 2019 as a year?
Oh, I mean, without sort of coming up with a cliche, I could probably just say it's been a year of ups and downs, and it's kind of laying the platform for the 2020 election in the US, which most
folks. Oh, dear. Well, we've got some roboing going on, but try again.
Oh, no. I hope it'll work, but we also saw like a repudiation of Trump's form of conservatism in some form with the rise and fall of the Andrew Yang meme and the pink hats. But one of the things which I see as well is the Zuma repudiation of Zuma conservatism, and which is just another expression of liberalism. It's absolutely fantastic. Are getting out in their droves to
Fuck. Yeah, this is bad. You're roping all over the place. Keep going. Maybe it will clear up.
So, you know, it's just nice to see that a lot of people are getting interested in politics to want a sort of more left-wing persuasion.
I think perhaps it might be a good idea for us to abort this and try later, because it is. I can't really follow what you're saying, and people in the chat are saying the same thing. Orwell, I'm sorry. Do you want to persevere a wee bit longer, see if it clears up?
No, it's okay, Woz. It's probably not going to get any better, to be honest, for today.
Oh, see, now you sound fine. Now you sound fine. Right, go ahead.
It's just ironic that this happens all the time. You know, boom tech is one of these things that I have to deal with out here living in the middle of nowhere. If you were to encapsulate 2019, this was the year that the death knell sounded for conservatism. You saw the personified by Andrew Yang's meme, which, you know, fell pretty quickly after it rose up. But I just think it's wonderful that a lot of young people are becoming invigorated and getting more interested in politics. This form of right-wing liberalism with masquerade conservatism. What do you think, Rose?
Oh, well, I think, I mean, from what I've heard, I can make out enough salient points to talk for a while. I think that you're absolutely right that mainstream conservatism took a beating this year in various ways. Most obviously with the Turning Point USA thing, the Groypers. I hope that continues, and I think that the same in Britain as well, in a way. I think that Boris Johnson and so on are thinking that, are perhaps naively thinking that the public are going to be content with, you know, standard neocon stuff, but no, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that Brexit is the start of something, what was always the start of something quite new, quite radical, is going to develop in that direction, probably nationalism. And I think you see the same thing in America with the Groypers. I think it's the start of a much bigger pushback than perhaps at first appears.
Right, right. And if you look at the people who support these globalist politicians, and you've got to, you know, what we have now, what we're up against now, is sort of a migration of progressivism. It's taken on the form of a cult, and you have, has molded by the cathedral, which kind of its own logos in the form of media, entertainment industry, and academia. And a lot of people, especially particularly working class and young, liberated people who didn't get to indoctrinate, so you're just coming out against this, and I think it's fantastic. I did a really interesting video a couple of weeks ago that is very much a middle class trait in order to perhaps keep those ones of society. And I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I admire you for trying, but I think we'll have to leave it for tonight. I know you did say that you'll be moving to the city next year, so it's the connection will be better. Someone has suggested that you reboot your router, your router modem. I don't know if that would help. Orwell told me earlier that he actually went up a mountain to charge up a radar, an antenna thing, so that he would be able to do this tonight. So a lot of effort has actually gone into making this possible. And I'm certainly very grateful to him for putting in that effort. But I suspect the connection is not going to be optimal. So I don't know. Do you think you could reboot your router?
No, because it'll take about an hour and a half to do. Unfortunately.
See, now you sound fine again. It's so frustrating because now you sound fine. All right. Let's have one last try and we'll see how it goes.
Okay, so it just seems as if this middle class elitism, you have this lot of university educated people, and this maybe it's not as fervent political following from new entrants to Western. In the form of mass immigration in America, you have a lot of Hispanics, people from wherever else, overwhelmingly Democrats. But in the UK, you have the same phenomenon with new arrivals after 1948. Is it still bad?
It's weird. When I unmute, it seems to get better.
Okay, maybe it's interesting.
Keep talking. Keep talking.
Okay, so it just seems like they form this sort of dialectic of which you can just distill into is pro-white, and I know it's pretty much point out, but I think politics has sort of lost its materialist nature. It's not really about promising economic benefits or perks anymore, but it's more of a case of trying to offer people something that you can't really assign monetary value to, which is why you saw this white working class repudiation of Labour in the last election, because they can't be promised with any more perquisites. They can't be promised with any more welfare. I mean, what else could you offer? The whole society's gone. The city or town's been deindustrialized. Half the people just spend their lives engaging in these soulless endeavors, be it consumption or employment, working in some horrible call center, for example, and then spending their paycheck on going to Magaluf in the summer and just drinking on the weekends. People want a bit more substance in their lives than just these meaningless experiences. And I think what's really come to a head in the end of this decade is that people are obsessed with the fact that there isn't much meaning in their lives. And I think they're trying to find that in a political channel with stuff like Brexit and unfortunately, the American First movement, shall we say, in America, which has sort of taken a less Trumpian route.
That is I'm just so relieved that we've now got great audio and everyone in this chat is accusing me of messing it up somehow. Like it's my fault. No, it wasn't my fault. I thought that there would be less load on Orwell's internet connection if I muted, but apparently that makes it worse. I don't understand at all. It's counterintuitive, but anyway, it doesn't matter. I think the point you're making is very interesting, that basically economics has been enough of a sop to people. It's been enough of a focus for politics for quite a few decades.
Yeah.
Probably, I mean, definitely Thatcher in the 80s, it was all, what was the term? Monetarism and, you know, Reaganomics in America, where basically it was this awful libertarian thing where the only thing that matters is money. But that was enough because the money was, you know, despite the recessions and so on, for some reason, the world kept getting wealthier and wealthier. And I think perhaps that's no longer the case. And I think perhaps the 2008 economic crisis was the switching point here. What would you say about that?
Perhaps, but I do think that this train has been in motion for a few decades. If you look at the 1960s with the sheer amount of social revolutions that you witness in that decade, I think that people did begin to shy away economic promises. Economic promises were more or less just a palliative at the time to sort of take people's mind off their problems. But I think the left wanted something a bit more than just eco then, despite the fact that, you know, they expanded the welfare state manifold times. And now they don't really.
Well, that's the interesting point. That's the interesting point, isn't it? Because the right were always sort of autistically just economics. It was just economics. They didn't care about identity. They didn't really seem to care very much about culture or heritage or anything like that. It was just, is the economy okay? And now they're in this position where the economics is not enough. And I think that this is what I mean about Boris Johnson and so on. I don't think they're going to know how to adapt to this, unless it's just, well, nationalism.
Oh, exactly. And I don't think they're going to be able to do much to sort of stem the tide of nationalism. I don't know what they're going to do to prevent, to try and dam this flow, because people seem to have a demand for something greater than themselves, which just can't seem to be assuaged by economic policy. What can they do? I mean, you know, most Western countries are completely overloaded by debts. You look at the debt to GDP ratios and all of these structures are just completely unsustainable. But the point is, people don't really care. You can't really enthuse an audience by talking about, oh, well, if we have a 2.5% tax cut, the GDP will grow by X amount. Unfortunately, that doesn't really resonate with people, especially not younger people anymore, since the kind of the Groyper right and the America First movement has developed a slightly anti-capitalist streak, and I completely empathize with it, to be honest. I think that you've gotten to the stage where economics can't really offer people much more than what they already get. And just to finish off this point, since 1965 in America, the GDP has increased over 20 times, but has the quality of life increased that amount, if you could assign a metric to it?
And another interesting point here is that I read today that there's, I don't know the details, but apparently Black Americans are poised to, there's some sort of drive to get them to vote Trump out, which is very interesting because one of his selling points has been that he's reduced Black unemployment. He's improved, Blackonomics. He's improved the economy for Black people. Well, that isn't enough. You know, because everyone still associates him with white people. So the identity thing comes in again. It just keeps rearing its head, no matter what you do to placate people on these non-identity issues.
Exactly. And you know, maybe in a way the media's made their bed and they've got to lie in it by sort of stoking up the flames of non-white identity, while simultaneously sort of denigrating white identity. And you have this sort of emboldening of identities around you, and then you think to yourself, well, hang on, why can't I have that if everyone else has it? Why do I have to prostrate myself to every other group but my own? It doesn't quite make sense. And one of the most white-pilling things, I think, in the last 4 or 5 years is just to see people becoming far more conscious of an identity that is their own, that is received, that is part of their heritage, that can't be taken away from them, no matter how much propagandizing comes out by the media and by the entertainment industry.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing here is that for some reason, economics isn't enough. You know, I think the right always assumed, well, definitely since World War II onwards, the right assumed that it would be enough. And I don't know why, perhaps because there is rising economic turmoil. It just isn't. One of the things I think is that the middle class are being hit by this for the first time. You know, up until really up that I think that's something that has been changed by the 2008 economic crisis, financial, I don't know what the term for it, the GFC, the global financial crisis. Prior to that, it was really only the working class who got screwed over in, well, with globalization. But since then, perhaps as a result of the crisis, perhaps not, just rising globalization and automation, it's now the middle class as well who are being affected by this. I think this is actually perhaps why, well, one of the reasons why you see middle class people getting into nationalism now.
Right, right. And I think this illusion of government stability has kind of gone out the window, sort of been revealed to people that the government isn't going to bail you out. I mean, they have the big bankers' interests at heart. They have the big mega corporations' interests at heart over your own. So it's time to kind of really, it's just this sort of sinking realization that you're not their number one priority anymore. So there might be a stage of blackpilling, or there might be a stage of seeking comfort or cope within supporting stuff like the EU, because you believe it's the moral and right thing to do, since you're only ever exposed to left-wing narratives in the media and the entertainment industry, so you don't know any better.
Yeah, well, that makes me think of the champagne socialists, the sort of upper middle class, who are obsessed with the EU, the Remainers, and the Extinction Rebellion types. I think it's very interesting that they also are not really content with economics. They also want not identity, but they want projects. They want something to believe in, something to have faith in. And for some of them, it's the EU, this ever closer union, this process of homogenizing nations. And for others, it's this thing about the climate, the climate apocalypse.
Right, right. And you know, you look askance at these kind of problems and policies and projects when all of their prescriptions are very, very far left in nature. They're very restrictionist, they're very regulatory, and they all have a very metapolitically left-wing bias to them. So you think, oh, okay, it's just basically to further and consolidate your power. That's basically it.
Yeah.
So more globalism and more obstructionism towards national goals. That's it's very suspicious when we have these huge crises in our hands, and oh look, all these globalist organizations.
You're back. You roboed out momentarily, but you're back again. So, what else would you want to say about 2019?
Well, just from a spectator's point of view, it seems as if the anti-white propaganda out there has sort of quietened down the tiny bit, or it's maybe taken on a new form by being shoehorned into a lot of narratives within entertainment shows on Netflix, for example. It's not so blatant and overt, because I think that caused a tremendous backlash with Trump's election. I think after 2016, maybe the huge inflow of all these anti-white articles just blaming white people for all the conceivable atrocities in Western society, but that just kind of died a death. And now the things that are being promoted are A, entomophagy, which is the bug eating stuff, it's a form of humiliation, and the drag kid stuff, which is also a form of humiliation. Apart from that, I think the anti-whiteness stuff has gotten more subtle, because I think a lot of people began waking up to what was out there, and there was a subsequent backlash. Blackpill had a really good saying about this. He said, the elites or the powers that be, the people who control the narratives out there, have like a Jenga game in front of them, but they're at the stage where it's really rickety, it's about to fall at any moment, so they don't know which piece to pull before the whole thing comes tumbling down.
Well, I wonder if they're going to get more subtle with the drag stuff now and the trans stuff, because that seems to be the big thing now. I mean, it's every single day. You're on Twitter, I'm on Twitter under a sock account, I will confess that just now. And we see it all the time. you know, every day there's a new story about you know, drag kids or trans, and it's very interesting to me how closely the trans thing is now allied with the kids thing. I mean, you don't hear about adult drag queens or adult transgender. You hear it's constantly linking it with children. I mean, at the risk of asking an obvious question, what would you say about that?
Well, you know, the very few things which aren't normalized these days, and one has to think, considering the nature of progress, and that progress has no founded, you know, has no fixed destination. And if you were to stop progress, it would be some form of conservatism. Progressivism is a revolutionary ideology in nature, and it just can't stop. It's a form of Trotskyism, which promises a permanent eternal revolution. So progressivism cannot stop as a sort of dominant ideology. And, well, the next step is paedophilia, if I'm going to be blunt about it. The other thing I've noticed, just to further your point, is this promotion of mixed age relationships. So you have some dude who's in his 60s and dating somebody who's just turned 18, and they've been, you know, friends, or they've been cozy with one another for about 5 years or something. So you think, oh, okay, I see what's coming next. They're just going to try to perhaps lower the age of consent. And the other thing, which you probably notice as well in relation to this, is they're trying to lower the voting age.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, in Scotland, that started with the independence referendum. I think 16-year-olds were allowed to vote in that. And then they said, well, we can't let them vote in a referendum and then not let them vote in general elections. So right. There was a special rationale for letting them vote in the referendum, which was that it would affect them more than it would affect the old because they'll live longer. I mean, that's obviously a stupid rationale anyway, because that the same thing applies to any general election. But that's what they did. For some reason, it was acceptable to use that rationale for a referendum. And then once it was done there, well, you can just apply it. Well, you've got to be consistent, right? So you've got to let them vote in general elections. But by the same rationale, you could say, why not 10-year-olds? Why not 6-year-olds? The same rationale applies. You're supposedly hoping that 16-year-olds are old enough to make good decisions, but then why? Well, why are you hoping that? I mean, it's the whole thing is clearly stupid, and we know exactly what's going on. They know that the young tend to be more left wing and gullible and idealistic and naive.
Yeah, you know, I've joked in the past that you'll soon be able to abort somebody who can legally vote. The way things are
going. Yeah. Yeah, okay, go on.
But what does that say about your ideology? What does it say about what you represent politically if people whose brains haven't developed will statistically be more likely to vote for your causes? What does that say about you? But of course, you know, they don't pause and self-reflect. It's all about power, and it's only ever has been about power. And going back to what we're saying about the right's adoration for economics, they've just completely overlooked the nature of power, and they completely, you know, I think this is not something that pertains to the kind of the layman who votes conservative and who has centre-right leaning. Well, this is, you know, they have this good faith idea that you can have a rational debate with somebody on the other side of the aisle. It's not about that. It's about power. They completely miss the point that everything that the left has done culturally in the last 50, 60 years has been to kind of like create a metapolitical society that's going to vote for the left from here on until the end of time. But there have been some hiccups on the way. Trump, Brexit, to name a few.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody was confused in the live chat, thought we were talking about lowering the age of consent. I don't think that should be done. We're talking about the voting age being lowered, and we're also against that. I mean, I would say 25 would be a good voting age. If you were to put an arbitrary number on it, what would you say?
If we had to vote, 30 plus, children, property owners, married.
Yeah, well, that would be ideal. That would be ideal, yeah. Even though that would disqualify me, but I don't care. I think it would be sensible. I think it would be right. I think that giving the vote to even 18-year-olds is just crazy. I think I've said this before. In my first election, I was 18 and, must have been. And I voted for the Green Party, which is... Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show how immature that, you know, compare. Yeah, well, it just goes to show how much somebody changes in their 20s. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you were to compare me, you know, I'm 30 next year, but if you were to compare me to who I was 10 years ago, I was just a completely different person. I mean, my values and priorities would, you know, there would be some very choice words for it in right-wing circles. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. So what would you say about the, I don't know if you want to talk about the 2010s as a decade, or do you have any observations about that you'd want to dispense?
Well, you do see the uptick in anti-white propaganda around 2011, 2012. Somebody actually found a graphic for it, which found that there was this meteoric rise in anti-white articles around 2012. But it seemed to have been like the great awakening for a lot of people and continues to be so. Even normies are starting to reject politically correct narratives, and they're starting to see that what they're being told by the media doesn't match up to the lived experiences. So they have a lot of cognitive dissonance. And if you press them hard enough in conversation, if they're not politically active, if they're not the kind of people who have their preferred pronouns in a bio kind of type, you will find some overlap in what you believe in most of the time. They'll disagree with a lot of the sexualization of children, the sexualization of society. They'll disagree with open borders and globalism and that kind of stuff to a certain degree. I think it's instinctive in a lot of people, but it's been very heartening to see that the globalist message, which can only go get crazier and crazier as time goes on, because as I think I pointed out before, the battle has sort of lost its material sort of right-wing liberal versus left-wing liberal nature. And, you know, the right is beginning to represent more of an idealist, or if they say it, or nationalist or transcendental cause, rather than just supply side or monetarism or Chicago economics, whatever you want to call it. People are sort of abandoning this promise of boosting GDP, boosting the GDP per capita, and improving people's material living conditions, because that doesn't cut it anymore. You can see that a lot of communities were far happier, maybe being a bit less materially prosperous, but having cohesion, having low time preference, having stability within their communities, knowing who their neighbors are, being in a homogeneous high trust society. These things don't have a monetary value on them. Unfortunately, no amount of products you can consume will be able to fill in the gap for those things which have been taken away from you. And I think people, especially the working class in Britain and America, is conscious that this was taken away from them on purpose, not by accident.
Yeah, and in fact, the process that they're sold, that politicians try to sell to them, of globalization and ever greater wealth, actually increases the diminishment of these things in their lives. Community, all the rest of it, even stable jobs, because everyone knows it's more economically feasible, profitable to offshore jobs to Asia. So that's just a reality. I mean, if you're going to use that as the sort of goal, then everyone in the West is ultimately screwed, because you'll always, any employer will be able to find someone in Asia who will work for a lot less money than someone in the West, unless we accept a drastic reduction in living standards.
Exactly. And I don't think people are willing to take that upon themselves. There is a sort of a group of Twitter and maybe a group of YouTubers who are far more, shall we say, warm to the accelerationist cause. But it's going to take a lot of pain, maybe immediate pain, but I think the reward would be worth it in the future. I'm not saying like a whole collapse cult thing. I'm just saying that in order for people to get to where they want to be, there's not going to be a very nice timeline on the horizon, economically speaking. I think that the whole Western economy is just a house of cards, and you know, it's just, I feel like it's a matter of time before the whole thing begins to unravel, unfortunately. But it won't be sort of the sudden thing. I think it'll be more piecemeal than anything. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, Black Pigeon, or rather Felix Rex, just put out a very, very good video about this, I think yesterday, and it's on his Felix Rex channel, and I think everyone should watch it. It's about 25 minutes long, but it's a very good video. And I think that it does seem to be, I'm not I'm not that into economics. I don't really understand economic things very well. But it does seem that the among people who do, there's a consensus that we're in for a decade of, you know, the 2020s is going to be a decade of severe economic turmoil. And that's coupled with the polarization of politics, you know, the turmoil that I think is going to come in culture.
Yeah, exactly. And you pointed out this sort of metamorphosis of the right post-Second World War, where they shied away against the preservation of culture, values and nation, more towards some sort of libertarian ideal. And you do have this contradiction between this desire to have the freest market possible and the preservation of culture. I think we have ample evidence pointing towards free market economics or the real world expression as being corrosive to preserving people's culture and homogeneity. I mean, I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too. You can't have this sort of free market ideal unless it's highly protectionist and restrictive, even with to corporations and companies within your own nation. I don't think the two can march together hand in hand. And, you know, on the subject of politics, I live in Chile, for those who don't know. When at the peak of the Chile riots, where metro stations were blown up, supermarkets were set aflame, the peso lost 20% of its value against the dollar. You can bet your bottom dollar that people are hedging for these kinds of events. They know that political turmoil causes these blips in currency stability. So people definitely do profit off this kind of things. And also in China, there's apparently been a huge swine flu, which has really increased...
Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I'm back again, though. Don't worry. My Chrome seemed to crash, that my page. So don't worry, I'm back. It's okay. You're thinking about it's happening quite a lot recently. I think Chrome needs to do an update. But anyway, you're talking about swine flu.
Yeah, so there's a huge demand for foreign imported meat in China at the moment. So you have these little things that happen on a global scale, and you kind of realize that it's all a house of cards. And this popularity in populist Western politics is going to have global economic ramifications without a shadow of a doubt, which is why all of these publications such as Bloomberg, The Economist, CNN Money, and all these types are so vehemently opposed to nationalism and populism in general, because it directly affects their own interests.
Well, yeah, and you see that in the paper, the magazines, the news websites, and so on. That they are, I think, they can sense that things are spiraling out of their control, out of their they don't quite know how to approach this anymore. I think they can sense that they used to be in control. It's not even because of alternative media. It's because of just culture in general, I think, is now becoming far more, just chaotic.
Right. And, you know, one of the things the right traditionally stands for is order. But I think we've reached a point where there aren't really going to be... we're kind of reaching a point of chaos, because we do have very different points of departure between the left and right. And I think there is more of a metaphysical battle going ahead rather than a political one. You know, politics is just the expression of something that represents something more spiritual, perhaps. And globalists, you know, they're just going to double down on the materialism, whereas the right is promising something different. And you won't be able to reconcile the two positions. How can you? Which is why these neoliberals are kind of fretting a lot. And also you see a ton of these articles published. Oh, why is the populist right on the ascendancy? And they either come out with some sort of half-baked answer, because they don't want to address the question that their policies and what they stand for has been an utter failure for all the people that they supposedly were to protect and represent. And if they were to have admitted it, the whole House of Cards would come tumbling down.
Yeah, it's nothing less dramatic than that. By the way, entropy should be working again, but I think it has. It's all blank. There are no questions listed. So if you did post any questions or super chats, I'm afraid I've lost them. If you could post questions again, that would be appreciated. And now would be the time to do it because Orwell doesn't have much time. So, okay, lastly then, do you have any other ideas about the 2020s? Or do you think, as most people do you think we're going to be in for a decade of extreme censorship?
I think we will see more and more censorship, but it's going to come in waves. It has to be gradual. It can't just come all at once. Otherwise, it would be like a red pill suppository for people. Who got their finger on the pulse. It would be undeniable at that stage. Plus, they'll have to sort of widen definitions as to what constitutes hate speech. So eventually you'll have people who have Turning Point USA kind of narratives, and they'll be censored because, I don't know, their form of capitalism is inherently hierarchical or something like that, and you've got to be equal. I don't know. But my prediction for 2020 is I think that Trump's going to win again. But it's just going to be sort of a prolonged death knell of boomer conservatism and what it represents. And I think you will see more and more Groyper-esque individuals coming out of the woodwork and making it very, very hard for the Koch-inspired mainstream conservatives to really hold any positions. And you're going to see more and more Q&As being shut down. you'll see the conservatives basically trying to employ more and more left-wing tactics. You know, I'm writing my second book at the moment, and I bring up this point that if you look at what traditionally stood for left and right, apart from sort of a passivity towards hierarchy in embracing free market capitalism, the mainstream right just seems to try to out-left the left. For example, with that Rob Smith fella, you know,
that really backfired, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, anybody who's a so-called conservative will not be listening to Cardi B in the first place. Kidding me? And the other thing is the sort of astroturfing of that Lady MAGA individual. Just you have these people out of nowhere who mainstream conservatives or conservative Inc. just sort of wave about and say, "Look how tolerant we are! Look how liberal we are! In your face, leftists! Take that!" And they almost embrace with this real strange passion the sort of the Hispanicization of America, which is bizarre to me. They like to say, "Oh, look, these are the natural conservatives." Well, you got 50 years of data that says, and you know, it just seems like the whole existence is one giant coat post to show to the neo Bolsheviks on the left how wonderful they are as individuals. When you know that's not the way you're going to get and cement power. Unfortunately, it's just a power game at this stage, and you've lost it since the Second World War. Oh, have we lost Wozy again? I can't see the live comments, unfortunately. I've got Boomer Tech on my end too.
Yes, but, it happened again. I'm sorry. One last question. If the right is beginning to adapt, or at least there's a section on the right that is emerging to nationalism, for want of a better word, do you see any similar things like that on the left?
Yeah, I kind of do, but I don't think it's going to be as effective. They do have their own form of idealism, their own form of transcendentalism. Unfortunately, I'm not that well versed on the kind of the post-New Left. I mean, I've read a bit of Mark Fisher and Zizek, but I don't have enough to form a proper opinion because I haven't really been in that subculture. But I have seen that there is this stronger revulsion towards neoliberalism and these kind of champagne socialist types. I don't know if you've seen the same, but this is more relevant to America than in the UK from my experience, that you have more and more people who have sort of these post-Marxist views who are beginning to reject the kind of the elitist leftism that's put out there, even by the kind of the harder left-wing media, such as The Nation, New Statesman, and those kind of individuals. So I do see something happening. I do see that there is, this process where these people on the left are being kind of shut out by what they represent. But I think that's also within the nature of who leftists are. I mean, you see them get to power, and there's this complete squabbles until a strongman takes over and all these people who assist the strongman getting to power getting purged. You saw it with Stalin, you saw it in Iran with the 1979 revolution, almost everywhere else, because it only ever has been about power, unfortunately. And it's just interesting to see the avatars and the vectors it's taken in 2019, especially in a position where, you know, everyone has such easy access to a global platform, being social media.
Yeah. I wonder if you could say, would it be legitimate to say that the story of the left throughout the 20th century was just the story of seeking power at any cost? Is that too simplistic?
Indeed, indeed. And even meant socially engineering society to such a way that they would be favorable towards them. And, you saw the kind of the foundations laid to this in the last couple of decades of the 19th century with the Fabians, and then it kind of like evolved into different movements to try to influence society and have all these institutional changes towards left. But there was one thing I kind of like I realized earlier. You have this contradiction between what the left socially represents and how this neoliberalism forms a perfect marriage with the social positions of the left. So yes. I can't remember who it was. It was some futurist thinker from the turn of the 20th century who predicted this woke capital emerging, that you'd have this synthesis of the
social. Oh, God, yeah. And I think I know the
Wyndham.
One.
Wyndham.
Wyndham Lewis.
Yeah, I think it was. But anyway, you know, you have this sort of these predictions that you have like the synthesis of the socialist antithesis and the economics of the liberal thesis. And then you got the synthesis right there in neoliberalism, which is dominant culturally. And, you know, you'll live to see man-made horrors beyond your own comprehension, as are pretty manifest nowadays on social media.
Yes, your Twitter feed it often reminds me of that. I mean, some of the things you find, you know, are quite horrifying. Not always, but just like once a week, I'll see something from you and think, oh my God, the world we're living in now, you know, it's just perverse.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of these things are just unthinkable. You know, you kind of, okay, so you, just to finish off, because I've got to bounce in a sec, unfortunately, just to finish off, like you'd think of some things as perhaps, I don't know what your positions were at the beginning of this decade, but I was kind of like, you know, sort of just default right-leaning normie. And you think of the kind of horrors you see today, like Desmond is Amazing, for example, or the promotion of Peter. You think, oh my goodness, where the hell did this come from? But it's kind of simple if you trace it back to its origins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So any final thoughts, perhaps on a more white pill sort of level?
Yeah, it's not going to go on forever. And, you know, the last 3 years have been very promising to see people's views shift against whatever neoliberals and globalists put out. And you just read the comments of most of them and people under the age of 35 who aren't just like living in Portland or San Francisco or, you know, sort of Camden Town, whenever they post on these articles from neoliberals, it's all just, you know, people of our inclinations just being like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. Yeah, it does feel like the frenzy of 2016 has become more diffuse and is now actually just almost omnipresent.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that is a white pill in itself. Okay, so, well, let's leave it at that, and let's see if you have any final thoughts.
No, I just would like to thank you for having me on and having the patience to work through my robotic internet.
I know, after the first, I think it was at 7 minutes. I'll put a note in the description to tell people when things sort out. I think it was about 7 minutes. And also my own problems here. I don't know what's going on tonight, but I will restart my system before Morgoth comes on, as someone suggested. So thank you, Orwell and Good. This was an interesting discussion. I'm sure next year we'll have another interesting discussion, and it will take place over a more stable technological ground. So, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial 2019.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and the rest of you, thank you for commenting and persevering with our various technical problems. And I will be back with Morgoth in an hour and a quarter. See you then.